Hello and welcome to the Marketing Freaks podcast, and welcome back to another mini bite-sized episode. The topic for discussion today is B2B marketing, and specifically B2B content, which often can fall short of the mark in terms of quality, look and feel, inspiration, particularly when we compare it to the type of content that we might used to be seeing when we're looking at more kind of direct-to-consumer or B2C brands. So why is this the case, and what could be done to make sure that your B2B content really stands out and engages on a human level? To join me, I have a wonderful guest, someone that I've known for many years, Cass Swallow, whose CV includes brands like Virgin and more recently E-Energy. He's got a massive passion for doing B2B marketing well, particularly creating great content to really engage potential customers. So this is a really fun, fascinating conversation, and I really hope if you're involved in B2B marketing in any way, shape or form that you find this episode useful. I'm sure you will. As always, please do come and subscribe, give us a follow, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, come and check us out on YouTube, let us know what you think. Without further ado, let's get started with the episode. Well, look, Cass, welcome to the Marketing Freaks podcast. It's great to finally have you on here. We're going to be talking about B2B content, which I know is a topic that you you love and have worked in for quite some time as well. So first off, what do a lot of companies get wrong when it comes to B2B marketing content?
Wrong's a harsh word, but I'll lean into it without a doubt. So I think there's a number of things. The way it looks, that's the first thing. And just, I think there's a need from a lot of marketeers that work in B2B that they create things that are product led. So therefore, if they create any content, it usually that thread goes all the way through. It kind of feels very for a certain audience. And I think they limit themselves by that. The language that's used as well. I think consumer language has got a right to play in B2B, because at the end of the day, we're all consumers. And I read a long while ago something that turned around and said, if it's necessary, make it, but make it beautiful. There's no excuse, you know? So I think those things there is making something punchy, something that is easy to skim read, and then you can dive in quicker. It's in a language that everybody can access and understand, and make it look fantastic. The tools that are available today, PowerPoint, you can create pretty much anything. Anything's possible in PowerPoint, right? But most people don't actually know how to use PowerPoint to its fullest degree.
I completely agree. And do you think companies forget that they're marketing to human beings sometimes? Like, you can easily, I think possibly more so than B2C, it's easy to get caught up in, lots of corporate brand guidelines and corporate tone of voice and being professional, and all that stuff's really important to define. I'm not saying it's not, but I think you can sometimes get too caught up in that and forget that actually you're still talking to human beings. Do you think that's a fair statement or assessment?
I think it's an exact statement, and let me give some credence to that. Every time I go, any organization I work with, I ask them who their customers are. And the first thing they say is the company name. I've never heard it's John, right?
It's never Bob in sales, is it?
Exactly. Yeah. It's or in procurement. You know, the guys that are buying stuff. It's always the company names they rattle off, and so therefore, and when you dig a bit deeper, it's like, no, yeah, but who are you selling to? Oh, well, we're selling to ops directors, or we're selling to estates managers, or it's something. But who are they? You know, getting to that persona. I think there's a lot of companies that don't do it particularly well. But there are companies that are doing actually take that approach, and they've actually nailed it. And that's why they lead the charge.
Absolutely. Have you got any favorite examples, or kind of leads nicely into, well, if some people get it wrong, how should it be done? Who's doing it well? What does good look like when it comes to B2B content?
One of the companies I worked for back in 2015 when I joined the organization, Schneider Electric, they're a company, I mean, they are a beast of an organization, right? So back when I was working for them, they were working out of 200 countries, 180,000 employees, and they made everything from the power plant to the plug socket in all markets everywhere. So there's a company right there. Most people think Schneider Electric, oh, they must be German. No, they're actually a French company. And they started making cannonballs for Napoleon. So I mean, incredible company. But the way they presented themselves, it was all product marketing. And I didn't get to understand what the story of Schneider Electric was. They've transitioned themselves over the last sort of decade, and their marketing today is absolutely phenomenal. I love to see how they've transformed it, because there's a number of people that resonates for. To start with, the 180,000 or how many there are in the company right now, they feel pride behind that company. Secondly, the customers, there's always buyer's regret. Right, people want to feel proud that they've bought the right solution and they've brought bought from the right company. I think they're doing a phenomenal job, and that transition, as I say, has taken that organization 10 years. Another company that do a great job of it as well, Siemens. I think they're a phenomenal company. The way they push themselves out there, the way they get that master brand out into the big wide world. So there are a number, but looking at those companies, people tend to talk to me and say, yeah, but they've got, millions and millions of marketing budget to achieve it. I'm working now with a company, E-Energy. They don't have millions and millions of marketing budget, but we are able to take a lot of the things that those companies are doing and land it in our organization with the appropriate marketing spend and have the same impact for our customers and, most importantly, for our people.
Definitely. I think it's approach. It's about you present a piece of content out there and you have to think about what's the hook for someone. Like, what is it that's going to make someone, not a company, but someone want to engage in this piece of content or get in touch? Like, it's still finding that hook. So I don't think I don't think budget always comes into it. It's about approach and mindset and the way you're planning and the way you're approaching your content, in my mind.
Yeah. I always look at anything that I create. I think the first thing I'm looking at is who's the customer. This sounds probably really arrogant, but the first customer's me. It was once I heard, I think it was the CEO of Airbnb, I think it was something like that, and he turned around and said that he looks at it as artistry. And if you're going to sign your name in the bottom right-hand corner of that tapestry, you want to feel proud about it. And working for the people that I've worked for, anything that I've put in front of them, I've always, I look at it and it's like I've nailed it. That's like control S, take the rest of the day off. Where some in other cases I've seen it is they've stuff that's been served up. If I go to events, B2B events, and you see PowerPoints, people presenting them, and I'm looking at them thinking, I can't even read that. There's like 600 words on that slide. And it might be harsh, but I feel like it's an insult to my ass to sit there and have to, look at it and read it and listen to the person. If you're turning up, if you've got people at B2B events, invariably the delegates, they come in for free. The people that are presenting there have paid a lot of money to be there. So if the investment's been there to get, to turn up in and put your tent up, if you're creating a presentation, then surely you should put some pounds or dollars into that presentation and make it look phenomenal. Let's remember PowerPoint. It's the point. It's not PowerBook. And therefore I think, being able to, and it's also, it's the support act. The person that's actually presenting is the main act. The content that's behind them is to make, is to enrich the environment. And you've got to think about those people that are not only audible, but also visual. And keen aesthetics going to be a bit of a problem, not unless they come up and touch the presenter. But moreover, it's you've got to think about numbers, you've got to think about imagery, you've got to think about and big things that are supporting the presentation.
Yeah, it's all an experience, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah,
it should be. The next question I had was, I think it's great to talk about content in this way and make sure that content's engaging the people that it needs to be engaging, but ultimately it has to contribute to or drive some form of sales or revenue outcome. So within your experience of working for all the companies that you work for and all the scenarios that you've worked in, have you got any key learnings on that or key thoughts on how you not only create content that engages people, but content that works from a revenue driving point of view?
Yeah. So, I mean, if I look at the report that eEnergy's just put together for their education report, one of the things that when I'm reading anything is I want to come away and go, right, okay, what have I learned? But more importantly, it's like, what would I share? And therefore it's like, okay. So when eEnergy started to look at the education report, we wanted to think about what value it would actually have for headmasters in schools. Because if you think about the school environment right now, they've got lack of budgets. They've just come through COVID. I was reading a report the other day where some headmasters are having to put injunctions on parents coming into schools because they're bullying the teachers. The environment that they work in is a lot different to the schools that I work. You know, I went to school when I was a kid. So they're constantly, it almost feels like they're in a fight and they're in a battle. eEnergy goes into organizations and reduces their energy costs and almost gives them fixed energy pricing through solar with no upfront cost. So that's the value proposition. Schools typically waste up to 30% of their energy when they're closed. So that's worrying, right? So there's a lot of stuff that's switched on. But most over, eEnergy can save up to 60% of your energy with no upfront cost in a school environment. That's the sort of sales pitch that eEnergy has. But we wanted to create a report to turn around and say, okay, well, what has actually eEnergy done? And what is the education market look like? And we came out, when we work with a data scientist, because otherwise it's just opinion. So we looked at the entire, there's about 35,000 schools across the UK and Ireland. That's a lot of schools. Not that they're not all the same size. They're all hickledy-pickledy schools. Invariably, I don't know about the school that you went to, John, but my school had at least four buildings that was,
pretty big.
The original school they kind of like built. So they're not putting solar on the roofs of those. It's not like just, you know, going out to a warehouse down the M4 and then just like, you know, rolling it out because it's nice and easy.
Yeah.
LED lighting can save you up to 70% switching to, you know, from traditional lighting to LED. All of that can be done with no upfront cost. But when we started adding them up, what would it look like if we actually did all the schools? Because 70% of schools are yet to switch to LED lighting, which is the low-hanging fruit for energy efficiency. And then what would it look like if we actually saved, you know, put solar on those schools as well? And with the 830 schools that eEnergy's already carried out with, we could probably save the school about 2.3 billion over 10 years. So let's just think about that for a minute. 2.3 billion pound.
That's insane.
No upfront cost.
It
doesn't cost them anything, right? So that what that means is if they get any money from the government, they can go and spend it elsewhere. They can do it on other projects. But the thing is, any organization that is going to go and do a CapEx model, then it's going to all of a sudden draw up that, you know, drain down their resources they want to do for other things.
Yeah.
We worked on the basis, if the government were to do it for all that, it's about 5.5 billion would needed to be done. And don't forget the net zero target of 2050. So I think in schools it's 2030, in fact. So that's you know, the race is on. So the government set targets that are, by the looks of things, unachievable. So that's kind of like the feeling we've got. We've got a massive public sector estate which has already had 830 that we've clipped with no upfront cost. And in many cases, I mean, in the report, you can see Bellevue, they've been able to save a tremendous amount of money. I think it's about 115,000 over 10 years. So just round that down for a second, you know, 11 and a half grand cash back into their bank account that they're now being able to do extra sports days after our curriculum, you know, all that sort of thing that they wouldn't have had. And what we've done is just re-diverted the funds. It's no longer going to the energy supplier. It's going back into the school profit, no upfront cost. So in that report, it shows the opportunity, the prize that is available to that particular market if they engage, because there's three things that we tend to find with the education sector. One, they don't believe it, because, you know, even to your, I've spoken to you about this before, John, right? It sounds too good to be true. You're going to give me a bunch of money, it's going to cost me nothing. It doesn't sound right. But of course, the thing is it's inefficient technology. That's where the money's, you know, coming from. The next thing is you're a headmaster, you're a principal of a school, you're a CEO of a trust. This is not your specialist subject. So you're now looking for somebody that you're looking to trust, because nobody wants to buy something and then actually find out that they've bought the wrong thing because the investment's huge. So having the credibility in the white paper shows that, you know, we've done this before, we've saved thousands, and we've got good quality schools that have signed up to this, both in the independent and in the state school education. So I think creating those, creating that content that is interesting to start with, shows a problem, shows the proof points, and shows that there's testimonials from customers already that are doing it. And outside of that, I mean, in the report, with our funding comes through NatWest. So it's not some, like, you know, shady bank sort of like in a somewhere that nobody's ever heard of. And the fact that we've got government frameworks, is it's all been packaged up, and it all is readable, digestible, no matter who you are.
Definitely. I mean, I've seen it, and it is a really good piece of content. And it's what it sounds like if you were to distill this down to a new business content strategy, if you like, is you guys have gone directly to a very specific pain point, funding and energy, and you've answered that directly within this report with a massive dose of credibility on top. And that's kind of, but in an interesting and valuable way as well.
Well, I'll be honest with you, I think it blew us away as well, internally, honestly, because the thing is how often do you actually go and look at how many customers have you got and where are they and what have you done for them and what are the savings? I mean, we worked out that we've saved the education sector £13 million a year every year. That's what we do.
That's amazing.
Right. That's amazing. And obviously that number's growing every time we do more, we pick up more schools. But just to sit back and reflect on that, and I gave it to our CEO, Harvey, and the sense of pride that he got in it, because he's a very busy guy. A report's been created. He rolls his eyes and thinks, and then I showed it to him and he was like, wow. Cause he heard the word white paper and immediately got bored. Right. And I would as well, because most white papers you ever read, they're boring. But, and it was about his own company. And then we locked him in a room, put it on a screen and showed him. And he was absolutely blown away by it, because he felt like his words were, it says it looks like a website. Looks amazing.
That's really
good. So, yeah. And also it was about his business and what he'd actually achieved. And the fact that somebody once sort of said that the company, we're not fast paced, we're fast forward at E-Energy. There's no two ways about it, because there's a real job that needs to be done. And we want to be able to take the education market to net zero, or at least them get a lot closer than where they are. They shouldn't be wasting 30% of energy when the school's closed.
It's bonkers, isn't it? It's bonkers. But the content really backs up and highlights all of these points. And I think that's really, I think from a sales perspective, that's the key. It's kind of backing up these points, adding in credibility, but really truly understanding the position of your customer at a human being level and what pressures they're under and their circumstances, and having that front of mind will always produce content that is far better placed to drive a sales outcome, I think.
Yeah, I would also say that any organization is going to have a network of partners they're working with. Mm. And most organizations don't tend to leverage those partners they work with. They tend to go straight to the customer yeah, for a testimonial, but they will leave out all the other sort of like fringe partners they work with to make something happen. What we've done in this report is brought those partners together to actually create a real credible piece for the reader to actually, if they read this report and think, okay, well, e-energy is not for me, I've got a partner already in mind, fine, because what e-energy is all about is unleashing net zero. So therefore, if they go do that with somebody else, okay. But there's also the partners in there that probably they could look at and think, okay, well, that it is a real thing. I can go do this. And I think that's what, when working at Virgin, that insatiable curiosity it sort of taught me. It's like reading this is asking yourself, okay, all right, so it is real. I need to go and find out more.
Yeah. I love that, Cass. And a really good, I think, positive note to end on. So, look, thank you so much for joining, Cass. It was great chatting. I'm sure everyone listening has found that useful. And thanks to everyone who has listened in. We'll see you next time. Thanks again, Cass.
Cheers, mate. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I very much hope you found this useful. Please do come and subscribe in all the usual podcast places. Come and check us out on YouTube for more video content. I very much hope to see you on the next episode.